From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in a letter to the editor published in the New York Times in May. A man named Jay Feldman from Port Washington, New York, had written a response to an article titled Anti-Semitism Rises Anew in Europe. And he wrote, quote, "So it has come to this. 74 years after the Allied victory in World War II brought the Holocaust to an end, the slogan Never Forget has morphed into Never Forget to Hide Your Skull Cap. Make no mistake, this phenomenon is not limited to Germany or Europe, as Jews, easily identified by their appearance and apparel, are attacked on the streets of New York City and elsewhere in this country." End quote. According to the Wall Street Journal, the New York Police Department had 176 complaints of hate crimes from January 1st to May 19th, the most recent data for which is available now, and the data shows an 83% increase in hate crime complaints across all categories compared with the same period in 2018. While that information refers to hate crimes in general and not anti-Semitism specifically, the U.S. has seen tragic incidents of violence against Jewish communities, of course including the mass shooting at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. That violence and intolerance has led to concerns about safety and discrimination among Jewish populations, with Jewish leaders working to increase security measures. In our area, the Jewish Federation of Greater Rochester has launched a survey to gather feedback from Jewish community members and non-Jewish residents who work with Jewish businesses and cultural institutions. The survey is called Every Voice Counts. It goes well beyond addressing just security. The goal is to understand the views and values of the community and to use those results to plan for a vibrant and inclusive future. The questionnaire is the first comprehensive survey of the Jewish community in a decade. This hour, we're joined by members of the Jewish Federation to discuss the survey, what they hope to learn from the community's response, and how they will implement that feedback into future planning. We welcome in studio Meredith Dragon, who is the CEO of the Jewish Federation of Greater Rochester. Meredith, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Judy Azoff is chair of the Every Voice Counts Jewish Rochester Survey. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
It's a pleasure to be here.
In a moment, in a couple minutes, we'll welcome Dr. Jacob Moellum as well, who is vice chair of Every Voice Counts. Meredith, you were mentioning before the hour began here, this is an important time because if you do this every 10 years and you get the data, it doesn't matter if you do anything with it here. So this is really important to kind of plan for the future, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. So the data is only as good as obviously the value and its use. And if you take a study and the data sits on a shelf, it won't be useful for anyone. So our plan is to take the data and really to spend about 18 months once we have the data afterwards going into a pretty significant strategic planning process and actually planning for the future of our community.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to focus on a number of things this hour. I mean, certainly, understandably, we and a lot of members in our community have questions about anti-Semitism, concerns about security and violence, the perceptions in this community, vis-a-vis perceptions perhaps nationwide or internationally. We'll talk about that. Also, interestingly enough, there is an adult survey and then kind of a teen survey, so we'll talk about that. I want to ask Judy, why don't you let the audience know, you know, who you want taking the survey?
Well, that's a great question. We're interested in getting as deep into the community as we possibly can. In the past, the opening question to the survey was just, you know, do you consider yourself Jewish? This time, we're taking a different approach because we want people to see that we're trying to be as inclusive as possible. So now our opening question is, were you born, raised Jewish, or converted to Judaism? That's one option. Were one or more of your parents or grandparents Jewish? Do you consider yourself Jewish? Some people have recently discovered through like Ancestry DNA and those tests that they actually have Jewish roots, and we want to reach out to them as well. And also, the survey is open to people who are not Jewish but live in a household with Jewish members. So that's one whole loop of the survey. The other part of the survey, which is brand new this year, and Meredith and I think we may be the only Jewish community that's actually looking at this, but we also have a loop of questions for people who are not Jewish but who may work for a Jewish agency, get services from a Jewish agency, be a member of a Jewish agency like the JCC, use their daycare, use their camps. Maybe they were in rehab at Jewish Senior Life. Maybe they're a volunteer. So for the first time, we're actually reaching out to non-Jewish friends and neighbors as well.
What do you think you can learn from that?
Well, the first and most important question we're asking is, do you feel comfortable? Do you feel welcome? And for us, in our Jewish faith and tradition, we're a minority population. And we know what it feels like not to always be an insider, but to sometimes be an outsider. And we want to be sure that we're making people feel comfortable and welcome, and then, of course, also safe and secure.
That's actually a really generous position to take, you know, given the fact that the Jewish community itself can rightfully discuss whether the Jewish community feels safe. To ask non-Jews, do you feel safe? I mean, it must have been a real mensch who put together that part of the survey.
We'd like to think so.
Yeah. You know, I think it's important because we don't live in a vacuum. We don't live in a bubble. And there are a lot of community members who do use the services of the Jewish community. And we not only want them to be there, we need them to be there. And it's important to our future that we have good relationships across the community. And that's really the reason why that we've extended the survey in this way.
We thought that letter to the editor that I referenced off the top was so striking because it sums up how at least some feel, and I'll ask Meredith how you feel about this particular moment, not just with Tree of Life in Pittsburgh, which of course was, you know, an international tragedy, but some of the rhetoric, yeah. that at least feels more openly and sort of overt and even proudly hostile. It just feels that way, and it doesn't. And the reason that letter resonated because you look at this and go, "Where's the progress supposed to be here?"
Sure.
I mean, is that over the top, or I mean, how do you feel?
No, I don't think it's over the top at all. And I've spent a significant amount of time this year looking at the data, some of which you referenced. But the rise in anti-Semitism is actually quite striking nationally. When you look at the data, anti-Semitic incidents are up about 70% in the state of New York. We know that they're up 90%. And for the first time in, I think it's at least over a decade, there's been an act of anti-Semitism reported in every single state in the union, which is pretty significant. And we know, actually, just looking at some of the first survey results that have come in, which is about, you know, maybe 250 survey results, one of the differences that we can see from the survey 10 years ago is the rate of anti-Semitic incidents that people reported has doubled just in our community. So we know that it's there. I don't think that it's a mistake in the letter that you read, and I think that we really do feel it. We know that it exists. I think, frankly, anti-Semitism has always been there. It's been under the surface, and in the climate and the world that we're living in today, it's become much more socially acceptable to share, and I think that's what we're seeing. And we're seeing it very publicly, and we see it all over the country, sadly, and we've seen it here in Rochester as well.
Yeah, that's the more public aspect of it. You know, I've heard some argue in the last couple of years that at least we're seeing some of this stuff, that it's less under the surface, that it's more, and that maybe it'll be easier to combat it. Maybe, I guess, but I've also talked to people who work in schools, and again, we're generalizing here. I want to be careful. I mean, I'm sure there's different environments in different places, but who feel that when kids talk to each other, it's mm-hmm. coarser. It's just a little ruder and blunter. And I mean, I think that's true.
We had a meeting with regional superintendents in January, February to talk about anti-Semitism, and it came through very clearly from the superintendents that they were most definitely seeing this in their school districts today. Several had incidents to share. So it's there. We know that it's there. And I think the discourse, for whatever reason, is a little coarser. There's not as much fear, or maybe there aren't repercussions. But it's there for sure.
You know, Evan, 10 years ago, we really didn't even probe very much into the issue of anti-Semitism. A lot of people felt like, well, if you don't talk about it, then it's not really happening. It's not really there. But this time around, we said, no, we have to ask people, and we have to ask the teens, too. What are they witnessing? What are they experiencing? We can't hide our heads in the sand anymore. We're facing it, and we're asking people head on, not because we want to scare anybody, but because we want to find out about it and see what we might need to do to address it.
Go ahead, Meredith.
I also think that there's a level of fear that I think people are afraid in the moment because of the striking increase and the marked increase. So I think to be able to address it through this study and to understand where people are and to be able to do something about it is incredibly important. And the other thing that we know is this isn't just about anti-Semitism. We know that when anti-Semitism is on the rise, all forms of hatred are on the rise. And I'd say there's a canary in the coal mine there. and that when we know that this is happening, this isn't just about the Jewish community. It's about all communities, all minorities, that there's a real problem with hate right now.
It's everyvoicecounts2019.com. It takes about 45 minutes to do the survey, roughly?
It can take that long, depending on how many of the loops in the questionnaire actually pertain to you. Are you a young parent? Are you caring for elderly parents? How many children in your household? So we're asking people to really set aside maybe up to 30 minutes, maybe 45. If you can't stick with it that long, we have you're able to press the save button and come back to it when you have time again. And the survey is open for the next 2 months. It's not something, we keep saying, you know, this isn't a sprint, it's a marathon, and we want to give people plenty of time, and we want people to take the time and the thought to respond to the questions as best they can.
Everyvoicecounts2019.com. If you're successful, you'll have how many responses?
Well, last time, which was the first time we did it in 2010, no one had done an online survey before. Rochester Jewish Community was the first. And a lot of people told us we were crazy to do it this way and to deviate from the old way of doing it, which was a system called random digit dialing to common Jewish surnames. But we know people don't have landline phones, and they certainly don't have common Jewish surnames. So this time around, you know, when they did it that way, they hoped to get 200 to 300 people and extrapolate from that. When we did it in 2010, we got over 2,200 responses. So this time we're hoping for even more than that, especially because we're including our non-Jewish friends.
And that's a pretty good sample size. If you get several thousand people, you can learn a lot from it. I want to bring in Dr. Jacob Moalem, who is the vice chair of the Every Voice Counts Jewish Rochester Survey and associate professor of surgery and endocrinology at the University of Rochester Medical Center. Dr. Moalem, thanks for taking the time. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you, Mr. Dawson.
Mr. Dawson is my dad, but I appreciate that. And I you know, Doctor, I know your time's limited. I want to ask you what you think would be, you know, I guess what you think is most valuable or what you're most interested in finding out from the survey over the next several months here.
First of all, I think that it's an enormous privilege to participate in this project because I think that it could potentially be transformative. You know, we have the opportunity here to really learn what's on the minds of every member of our community here. And we define community as anyone who has any sort of interaction with the Jewish community here in Rochester. So it's a very broad scoped survey, which allows the Federation, but also every organization within Rochester to set its agenda and direction for the next decade. Transformative is really, it's a big word, but I think that this is really the best word to describe the potential that this project has.
Dr. Moalem, how have you seen anti-Semitism manifest in your life living in this community?
So probably the most overt manifestation was just a couple of years ago when a swastika was spray painted onto the street that I live on. Right here in Brighton. So that was the thing that was probably closest to home. But, you know, one thing that maybe defines my relationship with the community is that if anything happens, you know, in France or anywhere else in the world, you know, it doesn't take a big leap to understand that that could happen right here tomorrow. So, you know, it's a difficult question to answer because I think that every member of our community is affected by each of these acts, no matter where they occur.
Well, and I am curious to know, you know, Meredith was saying it could take a good year and a half to really analyze the data and get a good sense of what you've learned. I'm curious to know if the teenage cohort, the survey for 13 to 19 years old, versus the other survey, if it reveals similar concerns, something a little bit more acute. I mean, what do you think we can learn there, Dr. Moalem, when it comes to the way teenagers are viewing what's happening in the world today?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's one of the most important aspects of this. And I think that we have real opportunities to potentially intervene with the educational system. I mean, this would be information that the superintendents of the schools, I'm sure, would want to hear. There could be a real increase in the programming that we do through the Federation that specifically targets teens to both, you know, make them feel safer if that's a concern, or to educate them regarding appropriate responses to insensitive, offensive, threatening messaging, communications, conversations that they're having at school. And it could also be blown up because, as you know, as was said previously, anti-Semitism doesn't happen in a vacuum. And so, you know, I think that almost every member of any community is part of a minority in one way or another, and is therefore potentially a victim of discriminatory conversation, discriminatory acts. And how to respond to those things, whether they're happening to you as an individual or to a friend of yours or somebody that you witness, can be really, really difficult, particularly in the earlier years. And so I think that it is on all of us to collect some more information about this, but then also to provide, especially teens, but everyone, with tools on how to combat this on a case-by-case basis. And that takes a lot of courage.
Yeah, let me ask our guest in studio, Meredith Dragon, CEO of the Jewish Federation of Greater Rochester. When you compare that teenage set versus the full adult set of surveys, do you expect to see differences there in some of the responses?
I would imagine so. I think our teens live in a very particular demographic environment that can be difficult. In general, I think being a teenager is difficult.
It's always hard.
Yeah, right. So I think because of that, I think they're a little more raw. And I think because of that, we may get some really interesting data from them. And we ask them some very particular information of those teens. And I'm hoping that they answer honestly, which I believe that they will. And certainly having that data from those teens, I think, will certainly help shape what we'll do with them and with the future, in particular around anti-Semitism.
What do you think, Judy?
Well, for one thing, we're going to be able to compare responses on these questions against a number of factors, not only age, but also zip code, what county. This is not just a survey for Jews in Monroe County. We're reaching out to the 9 counties that surround Rochester. It's the Greater Rochester Regional Survey. We know that we have a congregation, for example, in Geneva, New York, and in Batavia, New York. And so it will also be very interesting to compare the responses that we get based on not only age, but also zip code. We also look at economic information, gender. So there's a lot of ways to look at the data, which we will be doing as soon as the survey gets analyzed. And then we want to share that data as broadly as we can.
Go ahead, Meredith, please.
I was just going to say, too, that I don't know that another community has taken on this teen component in the way that we have as well. Yeah. And I think that there will be great data there for other communities and certainly for across the country. Teens are teens wherever you go. So we're hoping that the information that we gather can help others as well with this population.
Yeah, and as I look at the survey, and in our second half hour, we'll kind of move specifically through some of the questions that are on there. But there's a set of questions about perceptions of Israel. And Dr. Moellem, I want to ask you first this question in a way that is certainly not at all meant to be political or even kind of push you more for personal views, but more to gain some insight into what you hope the survey reveals. Because when you ask questions about how one perceives Israel, how one perceives the kind of speakers or guests who come to a Jewish Federation who are either sort of more overtly and uniformly pro-Israel versus something perhaps more of a spectrum of speakers. You know, when you look at the recent conversations about the first-time members of Congress and some of the remarks they've made about Israel, it is so heated. It is instantly divisive and heated the way people talk about, well, they're not criticizing Jewish people, they're criticizing the Jewish leadership in Israel versus, you know, can you do both and can you be more nuanced? What do you hope comes out of the survey that at least gives, what kind of insight will be valuable, Dr. Moellem?
Oh, so to me, this is actually one of the most important and personal parts of the survey. I was born and raised in Israel, which makes this even more important. I think that it's critical for us to understand this because there's no question that policies related to Israel will be guided by public perception. And I think that it is critical to see where it's coming from. And I think that this survey really gives us insight into some very, very difficult questions, like, should we as a membership-based organization pay to hear people who speak, you know, whose views are against what the mainstream views are? And is that a way for us to advance as a group, or is that just going to be setting us backwards? That's a really difficult question. And so I think that, you know, just like every other aspect of the survey, with knowledge comes power. And in this case, it's the power to direct our entire community to move in a more positive direction forward.
Yeah, let me just go ahead and read on the section on Israel in the survey. And again, the survey available now for the next couple of months. Everyvoicecounts2019.com. How emotionally attached to Israel do you feel? How emotionally conflicted about Israel do you feel? All things considered, what are your feelings toward Israel today? How high a priority do you consider a political candidate's support for Israel when deciding who gets your vote? How much do you feel that you know about the BDS, the Boycott, Divest, and Sanction movement, which some refer to as the delegitimization of Israel? How comfortable and confident would you feel defending Israel if people around you made negative statements or accusations you knew to be untrue or unfair? That is just a section of the questions. And listeners, as we go throughout the program, if you want to weigh in here, I'm sure our guests would love for you to take the survey, particularly if you're in part of the cohort that, you know, that they're hoping to hear from. But you can call the program, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program, connections@WXXI.org. Doctor, I got to let you go in a minute and a half, so I'll just close with this. I know you're looking forward to kind of getting the community's insight on that. Do you feel like in 2019 it is more fraught to disagree because of the emotion and some of the heat with it, as opposed to, I don't know if there were any halcyon days where we could all just disagree and have a beer. I don't know if those days really ever existed, but does it feel more fraught today to disagree, and does it carry more emotion with it, does it seem?
Boy, I think that I'll just say that it seems to me that we as a nation are becoming far more polarized all the time. It seems to me like the extremes are becoming much more normalized than they were in the past. And with that, disagreeing very, very often gets confused with challenging the other perspective, and gets intermixed with challenging the other perspective, which does lead to a very emotional reaction. And I say that as a generality, but I think that as it comes to matters pertaining to Israel, to our heritage, to our religion, then things tend to become even more emotionally charged than they otherwise would. And I'm not sure if that answers your question well.
It does.
But that is my perception, yeah.
Dr. Jacob Moellem is the vice chair of the Every Voice Counts Jewish Rochester Survey and associate professor of surgery and endocrinology at the University of Rochester Medical Center. I know you got to work, and we greatly appreciate your time and your work on this. Thanks for joining the program today, Dr. Moellem.
Thank you so much, Evan.
That is Dr. Jacob Moellem. And before we go to break, let me ask our guests in studio that same kind of question. Does it feel like, if you disagree with someone in your own, even in your own Jewish community, about Palestine, about a member of Congress's comments, that it becomes harder to disagree and feel like, you know, friendships aren't strained? Does that feel that way?
It's certainly difficult and complicated. And I think when it comes to Israel, it is very personal. You know, we have an incredibly strong connection with Israel. I believe the American Jewish community is stronger because of the state of Israel. So when Israel becomes a point of contention within the community, it becomes very hard to have those personal conversations, and they do become heated. I don't know that friendships are necessarily lost over it, but I think it becomes complicated to be able to sit and actually have a meaningful conversation without taking it personally because of how close we all feel.
Yeah, my concern, Judy, is that whether it's about some of the questions that you in your survey have posed, or it's about politics more generally, or about social issues, we really do, I'm going to say we seem, but there's data that suggests this, that kind of confirms this. We are self-sorting into like-minded groups in where we live, in where we interact online, in who we talk to at lunch. That worries me. I mean, I guess that's...
I think it worries all of us, yeah. Evan. And one of the things we're probing at with these questions is, if you hold, or if you feel you hold, a minority viewpoint on some aspect, whether it's Israel or anti-Semitism, are you comfortable speaking out? Because that's also part of our faith tradition, is that all viewpoints are recognized and heard and hopefully respected. That's the challenge. Maybe we don't always reach that, but that's one of the things we're asking people. If you do disagree, are you comfortable saying that? Same thing for the teens. They also are going to be probed on this issue. And, you know, free speech is obviously a very important tenet to us all. So we're kind of trying to take a look at that and seeing what we can do so that whatever your perspective, you feel comfortable voicing it.
Yeah.
Voice counts.
Isn't that interesting? The New York Times a year ago wrote this piece on the so-called intellectual dark web, which is a group of sort of some progressive, some conservative people from different viewpoints, philosophers, college professors who've been sort of heterodox, who push back against certain ideas and uphold free speech. And yet if you criticize them, another college professor last week wrote a piece saying, we can't even criticize the intellectual dark web because they're very upset. And privately, they try to strike you down if you do that. It's a fraught time. And I hope on this program, we try to espouse the values that we at least will listen. And so let's do that when we come back from our break. Jane in Rochester, we'll take Barry, we'll take your email. We've got a growing list of feedback. As we talk about this survey that is available now, everyvoicecounts2019.com. And we'll tell you more if you just joined us about the origins of that survey and what they're hoping to accomplish with our guest. Judy Azoff is the chair of the Jewish Rochester survey called Every Voice Counts. And Meredith Dragon is CEO of the Jewish Federation of Greater Rochester. You can call the program 844-295-TALK. You can email connections@wxxi.org, and we'll get your feedback next. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, we sit down with people of color in the local LGBTQ community to discuss how they find belonging and how they recruit allies. Our guests share their personal stories, the challenges they face, and their ideas for how to create a more inclusive society. In our second hour, a new study shows the number of young adults dying from heart failure is on the rise. We're joined by a cardiologist and a dietitian helping us understand the research and the treatment. Talk with you Tuesday. This is Connections, and before we jump on the phone and get your feedback on this, I want Judy Azoff, chair of the Every Voice Counts survey, to remind you briefly why you're doing this now and the survey, who it's really aimed at.
So we undertake a survey like this once every 10 years, and this survey in particular is one that's forward-looking. We are not just collecting demographic data. Yes, of course we are. We want to learn about the size and the demography of our Jewish community. But more important than that, we want to learn about people's attitudes, their values, their ideas, because our organizations, our institutions, our synagogues are doing strategic planning. What do we want our community to be like in 3 years, in 5 years, in 10 years? And to be able to do that with a rich database is really a gift to the community. And by the way, this is being funded by the Max and Marion Farish Charitable Foundation. So we're very fortunate to be able to do this in the depth and breadth that we are able to do right now.
Well, let's get our first phone call. It's Jane in Rochester. Go ahead, Jane.
Evan, I'm not at all comfortable about speaking out about this. One of the main reasons is I simply don't know enough. I really don't. So I'm glad you're having this program. But there was an item on the survey that caught my attention, and that was, how emotionally attached are you to Israel? And that seems to be a damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of question. I think you could probably be very attached emotionally to Israel and yet not go along with all the foreign policy or the policies there. You could very much love Israel. I don't know quite what that's getting at in your attitude, but I also feel it feels a little reminiscent of the Vietnam War here, where we were careful around certain people what we said, because automatically we were a hawk or a dove. There was no nuance. And so it troubles me. I wish I knew a lot more. But what exactly was that particular item trying to get at, or how emotionally attached? If you're very attached, does it mean you have one attitude toward foreign policies or another? Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, Jane, well, as always, just a great point and question from Jane, and I appreciate that. So I'm actually going to take this in a couple of directions. I want our guests we will get Jane to the question directly of the goal of that specific question, the emotional attachment. And then the broader question that Jane brings up is one that comes up a lot. I'm going to oversimplify, but, you know, generally speaking, you've got people who are obviously virulently anti-Semitic, and you've got people who are critical of a government. They might not like Netanyahu, for example, just one example, or others, but are defensive and feel devoted to Israel. And then somewhere in the middle, I think you may have a group of people who are critical of the current Israeli government, but don't understand why the criticism is perceived as anti-Semitic, because occasionally it could be delivered in language that whether they know it or not, carries certain themes or slurs, and to kind of blur the line, because you'll hear people say, I was just criticizing Netanyahu. Why am I anti-Semitic? And it's complicated. So, and sometimes people know and sometimes they don't know. I've said this many times, but I'm going to keep saying it because I'm really grateful that one of our listeners one day, this several years ago now, I used a super anti-Semitic slur on this program, had no idea. And I'm really embarrassed, and I'm not going to repeat it now. I mean, you would be shocked to hear that someone like me, who has a decent little education, didn't know that it was an anti-Semitic slur. I did not. And I got a really graceful email from a listener who said, I don't think you know. And of course, I had this horrified moment. But I'm never going to use that phrase again. And when you learn, I hope, you know. So the question becomes, how do you kind of discern, is this person truly just critical of policy? Is this person anti-Semitic? Can you be critical of a government but not a people? That's complicated, Meredith Dragon. And we see that debate all the time right now.
It is complicated. And I think the challenge you inferred is some of the rhetoric. You know, I think criticizing a government, whether it's our own government or any other government, is the point of view of the person who's making the criticism. But it's the terms and the way that it's delivered that becomes very complicated, particularly around Israel. And I think what has really upset the Jewish community is that some of the criticism of the Israeli government of late has come with some of these themes that hurt to the core, you know, whether it's use of the Holocaust or terms that have been used against Jews for centuries that have brought about widespread hatred of the Jewish people. So when the criticism gets mixed with that rhetoric, it becomes very, very difficult and very complicated. And to get to the question about the question, it really wasn't intended to have any political manifestation at all. What we're really trying to get to is a Jewish community issue. And that's one of, we've seen in the last decade, what we believe or is perceived to be a growing distance between Jews in the United States and Jews in Israel. And we're trying to get a handle on, is that really true? Is there a growing divide between Jews who live outside of Israel and Jews who live within Israel? And if we do not feel as emotionally attached as we did in decades past, what does that mean and where does that come from? And really, it has nothing to do with the politics. It has to do with, I think, our growth as a Jewish people, the essential success of Jewish life in the United States, and a lack of connection over the generations. So that's really what that question is trying to get to. It's not really meant to be a political question.
Now, on the subject of criticizing policy or politics, we must be able to criticize a government's policy without immediately being told that we are bigoted against a people, right? And there must be able, we must have space for that.
Yeah.
Do you think too often it's clumsy, or people are not realizing maybe some of the slurs or things are kind of co-opting some of these discussions?
I think so. But I think when you're in a public space and when you're in our government or you're a political figure, I think you have a responsibility to know when you say something what the ramifications will be. And I think to say that I didn't know or I didn't understand, I think is probably an easy out. And I think that if people want to criticize, and even if the criticism is warranted, it should come from the facts on the ground today and not necessarily pull at those old stereotypes. And I think our elected officials, they have a responsibility to understand those old stereotypes before they get pulled out.
Hmm. Jane, thank you for that phone call. And I think the survey is pretty wide open in that way. I mean, you're giving people a wide range to kind of, when you have questions that are not just yes or no, it gives someone taking a survey quite a lot of room to expand on some answers.
And we have many of those questions that are a little bit more difficult to answer also have room for people to add in their own personal thoughts and ideas. And that makes the analysis of the survey more time consuming and maybe cumbersome for some. But we're really looking forward to seeing what people have to say. So if you have a few extra minutes and you don't want to just pick the quick answer, but you want to give us more information or more feedback, please take the time to do that. We will look at it, share it, listen to it. That's part of why this survey may take you a little bit more time.
Barry writes, when current groups list the prejudices and cite racism, misogyny, homophobia, xenophobia, fear of the transgender, Islamophobia, etc., somehow anti-Semitism is left off the list. Why has this change occurred? Now, I just want to say, I don't know specifically what Barry is talking to, but I do know that he seems to be saying that when there's discussion of bigotry, you don't always hear anti-Semitism mentioned. Do you agree with that concern?
Yes, sometimes. I do think it gets left off the list. And I think maybe because people don't see it as readily as those other isms. You know, I think that it's not overlooked per se, but I think when you look around society, we see racism every day. It's so apparently clear. Xenophobia, I think the same. Homophobia, Islamophobia. I think that anti-Semitism is real and it very much exists. I just don't know that people see it in the same way all the time. And you know, other than when there's an incident like what happened in Pittsburgh or San Diego, I think people see it, they know about it, and then I think that it gets dropped off the radar. But I think it exists in the way those other isms exist right now. And I think in some ways, it is as rampant as it's ever been.
Okay. Leah writes to the program and says, can your panel confirm or otherwise discuss the idea that Israel is a Jewish state? To some people, that suggests that the policies of Israel reflect Jewish values. Then those things get naturally conflated, maybe with bad consequences. From Leah.
So Israel is absolutely 100% a Jewish state. I'd say founded in Jewish values, but human values. And I think that certainly that can be confusing at times. But Israel exists as a country that is free to all people who live there. It is a democratic state. It is a state that values every human life, every race, every gender, every religion that is there. And it is a shining example of a democracy in the same way that our country is as well. And we can't forget that about Israel. It's a democratic state as well as a Jewish state.
Let me go ahead and read some of the questions specifically, because we read the questions, some of the questions in the section on Israel. This is on anti-Semitism. So here is exactly what you are asking the survey respondents. Within the past few years, have you or any member of your household personally experienced or witnessed any form of anti-Semitism? We're told that anti-Semitism is on the rise, both within the U.S. and around the world. From what you've experienced or heard about, do you agree or disagree? What can our Jewish community do to better prepare and empower you and the other members of your household to deal with anti-Semitism if and when it's encountered? Those are some very direct questions on that. Can I ask both of you to respond to the first one? Would you mind responding? Because I asked Dr. Moellem a little bit about his own experience, what anti-Semitism looks like in his life in the Rochester area. Within the past few years, have you or any member of your household personally experienced or witnessed any form of anti-Semitism? Meredith?
So I think the answer is unequivocally yes, for sure. I think Jacob's point about when an anti-Semitic incident happens outside of Rochester, we feel that too. You know, whether it was Pittsburgh or San Diego or Europe, I do think that we all see that and feel that. But very personally, you know, I think I have a child on a college campus, and college campuses can be a tough place these days for Jewish students. And certainly there have been things on the college campus that have been incidents that really troubled me as a parent, for sure. Things that probably wouldn't have happened 10 years ago. So that and, you know, because I work in the Jewish community, I certainly have incidents that come across my desk all the time when people call of a concern. We know a year ago, March, that there was a cemetery desecration here. So intimately, I've been connected with many issues, calls from parents about things that have gone on in schools, the incidents in Brighton and Pittsburgh with flyers that were distributed. So a good chunk of my time in the last couple of years really has been handling these issues of anti-Semitism in the community, and they for sure exist, and I've certainly seen them, sadly.
Okay. Judy?
Well, my answer would be very similar to Meredith. First of all, living in the Brighton-Pittsford area, there were some incidents in recent years that are disturbing and upsetting. And going back a few more years, we encountered it personally at the public school that our daughter was attending. She came home one day and said, "Mom, are Jews dirty?" And I said, "Why are you asking that?" And she said, "They're playing a game on the playground called Catch the Dirty Jew, and I didn't know if we were dirty." So obviously, those kinds of issues come up. Kids, small children, are learning that, hearing it at home and not understanding it, and then bring it to the school. I'm pleased to say that when we contacted the school, it was dealt with immediately. But I'm disheartened to hear in more recent times that the schools are still experiencing these kinds of hate-filled speech. Maybe it's not anti-Semitic, maybe it's racist, but hate is hate.
How much are you concerned when you go to this question on these questions on safety that our kids are going to say they don't feel safe?
That's of primary concern. You know, we want people to feel safe within the Jewish community. We want people to come and participate in Jewish life. And if our kids don't feel safe and they don't want to be there, that obviously has ramifications for the future. And, you know, safety is of the utmost concern. And when you see incidents happen, like in Pittsburgh and San Diego, we know that there are people out there who hate. We know that the rhetoric on the social media, Facebook, Twitter, it's there. It's very much alive. And it's not too hard to find. So if our kids are feeling it and seeing it and seeing it in social media, then clearly there is going to be some concern there. And we want to make sure that we don't build fortresses around our Jewish community, but that we create a culture and an awareness of security so that we all play a part in making sure that everybody can feel safe.
We're asking our non-Jewish friends who are taking the survey, we're asking them specifically the question, do you feel safe when you are at a Jewish organization or a Jewish event? We're also asking them a really interesting question, Evan, which is that a number of our institutions have for their first name the word Jewish. Jewish Senior Life, Jewish Family Service, Jewish Federation. And we're asking whether or not the use of that, the word Jewish, and the use of the word Jewish as the first name in an organization, whether that's off-putting, uncomfortable, whether it even made an impression on them at all. It's something we've been wondering about for a really long time, and we've decided to finally ask it. So we're anxious to see what people say.
The survey is online where, Judy?
It's online at everyvoicecounts.com or .org. Every Voice Counts 2019, .com or .org.
And the survey results are going to be made public toward the end of this year. Is that correct?
Yes. We'll have the initial data close to the end of November, beginning of December, and then we're planning some community-wide rollouts after the first of the year so people can come and learn about the data.
So Michael emails me to say that he thinks that WXXI Connections need to have more Zionist voices, more strong Zionist voices on the program, and particularly on issues like BDS, which I know are very sensitive. I'm listening, Michael, and I will tell you that it is not easy to book any discussion on issues related to Israel and Palestine. One of the main reasons is, no matter who is on this program, two things are likely to happen. I'm going to get a lot of angry email, and I'll have close to zero people say, that really opened up my mind and changed my mind. Things feel so entrenched. But I'm listening. I am listening. I promise you that, Michael. And I'm glad to get your email on that. Let me just give you BDS as an example. Do you think the public misunderstands it, Meredith?
In what way?
Do you think the public, generally speaking, has a good understanding of what BDS is and its origins and what you'd want people to know about it?
No, I don't. Not at all. I don't think that people understand that the BDS movement at heart is a movement to delegitimize Israel's right to exist. That really is how the movement was founded. And I think for those today who support BDS, while they may not believe that they don't want Israel to exist, that's where the roots are. And that's why it causes so much issue in the Jewish community, because people hear BDS and what they understand is it's delegitimizing Israel's right to exist as a state. And that's obviously a problem.
So if you have a Palestinian American who says, I do not delegitimize Israel's right to exist. We simply are using this campaign because we want them to recognize our right to exist. What do you say?
I think it's mixing apples and oranges. I don't think that delegitimizing, I don't think the BDS movement accomplishes that goal. I think that's really a challenge. In particular, I think that the movement has pulled itself in a way that has aligned with people who really do espouse anti-Semitism. And as soon as you begin to talk about BDS and you pull in those anti-Semitic tropes, it's really hard to have the other conversation. And I think that when you talk to the vast majority of Israelis, they very much want a Palestinian people that lives in peace and harmony with them. And when you throw BDS in the middle of that, it eliminates the conversation about peace and harmony in the region. And I honestly wish that the conversations around Israel and the Palestinian people could actually take BDS out of the mix, because once you throw that in, it actually complicates the conversation.
I noticed the survey, at least from what I have read, does not include questions on whether your respondents know and regularly interact with either Palestinian Americans or Palestinians. But do you think that that is valuable in the life of the Jewish community? And do you think, generally speaking, we all need to kind of get outside of bubbles, Meredith?
I think it's always good to get outside of our bubbles. And I think that the more any community can understand the other and interact with the other, the better we all are in all of the worlds in which we're living. And I think within Rochester, our Jewish community has a very close relationship here with the Muslim community. And I think because of that, we are able to bridge some important gaps and have important conversations. But I think the more that we do that, regardless of whether it's the Jewish community or other communities, the better off we'll all be.
How do you feel about it, Judy?
I think Meredith said it beautifully, which is that the best way to build these bridges is one person reaching out to another person, bit by bit, making relationships with people who are a little bit different than you are, who might have different points of view. That's how change starts. That's where change starts, in one-on-one relationships. Can't stress that enough.
In our last 90 seconds or so, Meredith, you go back a decade to the last time this kind of survey in Rochester and the Rochester region happened. Of the Jewish community. This is certainly seen some changes in what you're asking, whom you're asking.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think has changed the most in 10 years from what you expect to find? And with the caveat that the data will be the data, and we'll talk about it at the end of the year or whenever whenever you're ready to do that.
Yeah.
But what do you really think has changed in 10 years?
Oh, I've only been here three, so it's hard to, I'm just kidding. So I think probably what's changed the most in that time is the level of connection and the engagement that people feel within the community. I think what we're potentially going to see is a community that's much more disparate, that is not necessarily located in the core in the way it was before. And I think what we'll find is that the Jewish community has become far more dispersed than it used to be. And I don't mean just geographically, I mean demographically and probably within our thoughts and perceptions. And I think the Jewish community certainly isn't a monolith. And I think what we're going to learn is just how as a community we represent such an interesting amalgamation of people and opinions.
You'll see that. Yeah, you'll see that in the questions themselves. We have questions for our LGBT community members, for people with disabilities, for people in interfaith relationships, for people in interracial relationships. So just the fact that we're asking all these questions shows you how much the Jewish community has changed.
Judy Azoff is chair of the Every Voice Counts Jewish Rochester Survey, and that survey, which launched just June 18th, is going to be available for a couple of months, and they want to see several thousand people at least jump online and take it. EveryVoiceCounts2019.com. Good luck with that. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us, Evan.
And Meredith Dragon, let's do that. Meredith Dragon, CEO of the Jewish Federation of Greater Rochester. And as tough as these conversations are, we're going to try to have them. We'll try to have them better. So let's continue talking about these and related issues.
Happy to.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Our thanks to Rob Braden, who is the engineer, Bob volunteering, Megan Mack producing. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a great afternoon. We'll talk to you tomorrow on member-supported public radio.